You're listening to Sync Beast. I'm Graham, your host, and after I hit six figures as a sync producer, I made it my mission to turn sync into a game that I could play and win year after year. With a simple creative strategy, intense production techniques, and pro-level mindsets that got me there faster than I could have ever imagined. I want to sell the farm so that you can create a profitable sync catalog, produce for sync with confidence, and actually improve your lifestyle as a sync producer. I'm here to let you know that sync is just a game, and I'm going to show you how to play it. Coming up. All right, y'all. So I've been doing some thinking around some conversations that I've been having in my DMs on Instagram, and I'm noticing a trend. It's an increased interest in understanding what actually goes into a high-value, profitable sync track. I throw that term around all the time, high-value, high-value, high-value. If you've been paying attention to any of my content, this is what I preach over and over again, high-value, high-value. So I realize that I talk about it a lot, and the makings of a profitable, high-value sync track are often lost on a lot of people because they don't know what goes into it. They don't know what it sounds like. And of course, that's why I created an entire program around just that, like making high-value tracks. I built my program around it. I created my masterclass around it. Like, it's all about injecting as much value into your tracks as possible. That is where you start in the new game of sync. Everything I do is based on the value that I provide the marketplace with my tracks, my music. And that's what I want to help you do. So let's talk about what high value looks like or sounds like. Because there's an abundance of music to make, and we need to be very careful and very precise, very accurate about what we create as sync producers, what we feed the market. And that precision, that accuracy, manifests as the rules that we build our tracks by. Now, there's a lot of rules, a lot of things to focus on at once. But this is exactly what I mean if you've heard me say that there are rules to the sync game. And it all starts with the rules you build your tracks by. Okay, so what are those rules? That's the magic question I want to answer for you today. And the easiest way I can do that, just to break into even the most foundational, basic things that your tracks need to sync, the easiest way is to just tell you what I always look for in tracks when I give feedback to producers inside Sync Beast. Just tell you firsthand. And so you can really get the most out of this, I want to explain my feedback process. I give feedback because I want the track approved using Sync Beast strategies so that I can pitch them, so that I can feel super good and super confident about pitching these tracks. And if we don't get there, then that's also on me. So I make sure to treat every sync track that's made inside the SBA like it was my own. I come onto people's tracks and projects as an executive producer, which means I'm not necessarily touching the tracks myself, but I'm guiding and moving them closer to the goal of completing a track that has measurable value based on the rules that I play the game by, the rules that we keep talking about. And the pitch is an important target for me because I want it to be a no-brainer. That's always my goal. When I pitch anything to a library, I want the tracks to have so much value, and I want them to sound so unique and special that it's an absolute shoe-in. That's ideal. And that's why we put so much emphasis on positioning and targeting and production and collaboration and asset creation, right? The actual monetization of it. And the feedback portion is crucial to getting these sync projects across the finish line. I'm with them every step of the way, and that's how the entire experience is designed. From start to finish, I'm there with you, looking for ways to increase the value of your tracks, making sure you're actually following the rules and breaking them as needed to basically ensure that you've got something that the library wants. I don't want to make anything that the library doesn't want. So what goes into those tracks? Well, first, I'm always looking for people to use references. And most times, that comes from myself and the briefs that we offer inside the SBA. But other times, the producers are so on it that they hear a cool ref out in the wild, and they bring it to me to see if it's something that we can incorporate in their sync project. And it doesn't always work, but there's usually just one special thing that a ref does that we can extract and inject into their brief. It might be like a sound or something. But the main point here is that they're always using references and that they're not writing something that's too close to the refs. It sounds obvious, but you'd be surprised at how many tracks I've heard that are just so damn close to the references. I've been guilty of it in the past, and my mentors called me out on it so much, especially when I was starting out. It's part of the process, honestly. Getting way too close to the refs is like flying too close to the sun. Like, you have to do it to know how hot it is, and then you can pull it back, right? So just remember, always work from references and make sure you're not stepping on any toes there. And the way we find those references is by scrubbing YouTube videos and just taking away your ad blocker, just disabling it and just letting ads come to you. Or if you watch football or whatever, like, don't take a pee break when the commercial comes on. Literally just sit there, let everybody else walk away, but you sit there and you wait for an ad to come on that might inspire you, right? Because then you can use it in your own music. If you can hear it and you can hear the value in it, then you can likely emulate it too. So those are just a couple ways that you can get references. But really, it's all about keeping your antenna up, looking for things that you can do and use and emulate, and then just committing and doing it. Like, everybody complicates it so much. I can't tell you how many times I was working on a track and I needed to learn how to make like a synth patch or whatever. So I'd go on YouTube and I'd say how to make Flume, you know, synth patch. And I remember this one time a beekeeping ad came up and it had a really cool acoustic guitar thing that was like kind of panned back and forth. And I was like, oh man, that's a cool production technique. I think I could do that. So I literally abandoned the electronic song or whatever it was I was producing. I just like closed it and opened a new session. And like literally 3.5 hours later, I had a full sync track ready to go based on like literally just hearing 10 seconds of this ad, this like acoustic guitar thing that went left and right and left and right. And that really taught me like the power of just keeping my ears open. So I just continued to do that. It really is that simple. Like, just listen, you know what I mean? Because if there's a piece of music in an advertisement, then there's pretty much 100% possibility that a brand paid for it. So the line of thinking there is that if it made it into an ad, it's something that brands want. If brands want it, then libraries probably know that. They probably want it too. So deliver what they want. And the best way to do that is to use references. Okay, so then I move on to looking for ways that the track actually unfolds over time. And if you've attended one of my workshops, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. Sync tracks are not meant for listening. There's two types of music in the world. There's sync tracks and there's listening tracks. Listening tracks would be like anything you find on like a Spotify editorial playlist. It doesn't exist for any other reason but to just be music, right? For like people to like study to or whatever. That's listening music. What we're talking about is sync music, which is highly purposeful, highly intentional. So our move is to write a track that someone wants to listen to, but is secretly designed to work well for advertising. That's the pinnacle of what we do. And when that happens, you know you've got something good. You're able to tell musical stories with tracks that unfold over time. There's so much listening music out there that just kind of starts. You hit play, it starts full bore right out the gate. Everything's playing at once. It's just kind of linear. And that's fine for Spotify. It appeases people's attention spans, whatever. But sync, again, is a different story. And from the top, your track needs to leave room to build. That's what I'm listening for when I'm giving feedback. I guess another way to put it is your track cannot show its cards too soon. And the easiest way to do that is to start low and simple, or both, better yet. It's really hard for me to put it any other way. Like, take your composition. Don't even worry about production. Take your composition, strip it back in the beginning, and let it build phrase by phrase. add something new every 4 or 8 bars. You're going to want to like mix and match that. Like, just don't overthink it. Like, this is a super easy way to add a story into your track. I don't have time to get too deep into stories here, but just know that creatives won't touch your track if it doesn't have ups and downs, peaks and valleys. If it doesn't ebb and flow and grow and shrink, they're not going to touch it. So I always look to see if a track is starting low or starting simple. One of those two things or both. And if it's not, then I correct it. It's a super easy fix. And usually producers learn the most about producing for sync from that note alone. It literally just happened inside SBA. Somebody new just came in a few weeks ago and they didn't have a lot of experience writing music for sync, but they knew their tracks needed that thing. So fast forward about 3 weeks, they attend, you know, the majority of our calls every week, and they present a track that they've been working on, and finally, it showed that room to grow. Starting simple, starting low, and then it grew over time, because that's not what they came into the program making. They weren't used to making that kind of shape with their music, telling that kind of story. And it really only took them like 3 weeks to really understand, oh, like I have to start with almost nothing if we're actually being honest about it. We have to start with like one thing so that we have all this room to paint some contrast at the climax. And we do this because advertisers do. People who make videos do. They start simple and then they add a character and then they do a scene change and then they have a product reveal and then they show people using it and then they show all smiles, you know, like people... it changes their life using this product. And then it like ends on a logo. Like, you see how that develops? Like, that wasn't even about anything. That was like so lukewarm and vanilla, but it still developed over time. So your track should do that. Every track that I pitch always tells a story like that. And if it doesn't, then it gets rejected. It's really that simple. They're just not going to touch it. Like, it blew my mind when I figured that out. And I did it enough times to where it just became a habit. It became another rule that I played the game by. And if I broke it, then I felt like I was doing something wrong. That's how important it is to me. And that's the kind of feeling that I want every sync producer to have. It goes beyond sync producers, artists, songwriters, composers, whatever you call yourself. I want you to have that standard for telling a musical story. And story. I keep saying that word, right? There's the stories that your tracks tell, but then there's also the way that it's delivered. And what I mean by that is through the melody and the lyrics, right? The top line. Top lines are so, so important because they make or break a track in terms of authenticity, like believability. How much would a creative believe this track to sound real, to be real? Because there's a misconception that music for sync is fake or not real. So we don't want to confuse. We want to separate ourselves from that as much as possible, be as far away from that as possible. We want to be authentic. And I think about it like this. If you have a really good top line, chances are I'm going to hear your track and think, damn, you know, this is sick, right? Like, there's not much to say about it. If it's good, like if it's believable, right? I'm going to be like, oh, that's tight. It's very similar to like good sounding drums. Like, if your track sounds like the drums were recorded in some garage with no processing, like one mic, no finesse, no tact, even the most untrained ear might not take it seriously. It might ruin the track for them. The amateur sounding drums are basically going to force them to write it off in their mind. It's just going to be amateur to them. It's not going to be believable. So we want to stay away from that with our top lines. It's the same thing. And the thing that I look for in top lines is not so much what they say or how catchy the melody is right away, but how much negative space there is. And I know that probably sounds weird, but here's what I mean. I expect that your top line is saying something worthwhile. Like, if you open your mouth and you record your voice, I expect that you're going to say something of value. Otherwise, why would you? That's kind of the standard. I expect that you're going to be economical about your melody, that it's singable, that it's memorable, that it's purposeful. If you sing a note, then it should be on purpose. Because if it's not, then you probably shouldn't be singing anyway.
just like in that moment.
So in the same way, I expect your lyrics to actually make sense. Like they're actually delivering a message that could align with a brand or a scene in a show or, you know, some sentiment. That's all expected. I expect that from every track I review. And why do I expect that from every single track I review? Well, because that's what the industry expects. So why wouldn't I do the same? If I'm guiding people to write tracks that are worthy of a pitch, why wouldn't I approach it with that standard in mind? Negative space. So important. I look for negative space as I'm listening to a track because it's the fastest way to inject believable, authentic maturity in your tracks. I could go into an entire songwriting lesson in this, but I'll just keep it short. Maturity in the way that lyrics are constructed makes a track sound sure of itself. If it says the thing it needs to say and it gets out and then it goes back in and then it gets out, it's probably going to sound a bit more sure of itself than just wall-to-wall lyrics. And if that doesn't make sense to you, then just go listen to some pop music, honestly. They say something and then they stop. And then they say something and then they stop. You know, you could listen to the classics, Beatles, Paul Simon, you know, classic songwriters. Or you could listen to, you know, Swedish pop does it really, really well. So if you want to listen to like Britney Spears or maybe a little ABBA, like that, that's just a really, really good kind of mini course on negative space and how to use it to your advantage. But the more sure of itself that your track sounds, like it knows what it stands for, it knows what it's saying, it's on purpose. The more sure of itself it is, the more likely someone's going to hear 10 seconds of it and say, okay, you know, this thing has legs, right? They're serious. Every time something plays, it's on purpose. You know, whether that's an instrument, whether it's a top line, whether it's a lyric, like whatever it is, even if it's not the most amazing track on earth, like it doesn't have to be life-changing. It doesn't have to be like earth-shaking. The track could be simple, like just acoustic and vocals. That's actually a really good challenge. Like how can you play with as much negative space with as few instruments as possible? That's a fun game to play. And if you do it right, then you end up sounding really mature. Sounds high quality. It could be about a singular moment in time, something so intimate about a feeling. And if your track has wall-to-wall lyrics, no negative space, then it's going to be a lot to take in. You're effectively going to be over-communicating that moment in time, that feeling. You're going to be telling too much about it because we want people to listen, understand, and then we want them to process. So if it's just wall-to-wall vocals, it makes it really, really difficult to process the message and really feel like the song is put together. So I'm always looking for that. I don't want tracks to sound, you know, verbose. It's just not digestible. It's not digestible to the listener, which also means that it definitely won't sit well on TV where it has to fight with visual stimulus, the VO, the sound effects. Like there are so many things that could go on top of your track. There's always the possibility that they'll license the instrumental because that's automatically going to work well for TV because nothing competes with all that stuff, right? The VO and whatnot. But we want them to use our top lines. We want them to use the stuff that we wrote on purpose, the stuff we took time to put into our track. We want them to use it, everything we wrote in its final form, because that often means that there's more money to be made should the vocals play on TV, which is great. I'll give you a little stat. 88% of my syncs are instrumental, which means there's 12% that are top-lined syncs. So between those two, the 12% that license with top lines are 250% more valuable than the instrumental syncs. 250. So when I say there's a lot of money to be made with well-crafted top lines, that's the data fueling me to say that. And really good top lines have a lot of authenticity. They have a lot of maturity. And so the negative space is crucial to achieving that. And the easiest way to make it happen is to, again, remember, get in, get out. That's it. Get in, get out. Get in, get out. Say what needs to be said. Say the thing. And then just pause. Just let that line simmer for a second. Because something else, something flashy could happen in that space, that hole that you created, right? Your track could do something special, like a little lick or some ear candy could happen, even for a split second between lyrics. And then you could drop back in with your next line. Say the thing, then pause. Let the music take over for a moment. It's like you're passing the ball. You can see how this is going to create a dynamic listening experience, I'm sure. We don't want wall-to-wall vocals. Clients don't want wall-to-wall vocals. And it's something that so many producers and songwriters abuse. They think that they have to be all over the track with their top line, which ends up clouding the mix. It clouds the actual composition and makes for a very unfocused, distracting experience because there's no room for anything. There's no room to process. And of course, creatives aren't going to be able to envision how they can use your track. They need to see how your track fits into their project, like visually, like in their heads, right? They're visual people. They need to be able to see that. And if your track doesn't have the space, they're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is way too busy. Even if we take stuff out, it's just so busy. They're just so quick to get an assumption about a track, which means the first impression is everything. It's everything. So I hope you're getting what I'm putting down here. Because if you write top lines or if you produce tracks with top lines, like you work with other people who write them, start finding ways to make sure that they can sound believable, authentic, mature, purposeful. That is the least I can say on the matter. Those are the rules. I guess the next thing I listen for is production, right? I dig into the production quality. Again, I expect, if I'm listening to it, I expect your track is going to sound great. And if it doesn't, if you're not up to snuff in terms of production quality, then we have a problem. And when we have a problem, we can find a way to solve it. I'm not going to dwell too much on this because I don't have to. Every producer who comes to Syncbeast knows that production quality should be second nature. Like it should just be a thing. It's a given. Good, high quality production. Like we're past that part of the conversation by the time they get in the doors. Which is why I mention it to you. So you need high standards. Clients want really, really good production quality. You know, and good is subjective. You could be doing a garage rock track. And if it sounds too good, it's not going to sound like garage rock. So you need to be kind of amateur about it. You're saturating the tones in the right way. You're using tape in the right way. You're blowing things out in the right way. And it sounds fun and brash and bold, you know? That is good production quality because it's true to the sound. It's true to what they expect to hear. The same thing goes for something like future bass or whatever. Really nice feathery synths with a lot of, you know, sidechain and really cool snares and all the effects that go into it, right? Or drill. It's like trap music, but like very specific in the way that the rhythms happen. And the 808s that are used, right? If your 808 is wrong in drill, if it like sounds off, then it ceases to be drill. That's the basic idea. There's so much more that goes under the hood that we need to worry about. So if you're not hitting the mark there in terms of modern quality or modern production, then I sincerely recommend that you do everything that you need to get up to that level. You need to be there. So whether it's taking a course or working under somebody or even passing your tracks off to somebody who's just better than you, right? And finding a way to learn from that. Whatever it takes, honestly, that's one of the mantras inside Syncbeast. Like, whatever it takes, man, there's no pride. It's like, just get the track done as best as possible. That's what counts. Nothing will slow you down faster in sync than having to remember which compressor to use or what your keystrokes are. Like, you should just have those down. If no one's going to tell you that, I will. You should just have those down. It should just be an extension of your body. I hope that makes sense. So let's bring it back. I'm always listening to production quality, how real the instruments sound, how appropriate they are to the genre, how real the arrangement sounds, the parts, the mixing, you know, everything that goes into it. My favorite example is Cuban music. If you can pull off authentic Cuban music, as if you're walking down the street in Havana, like a busy street with lights, restaurants, and you're just in it, right? You're in the middle of it. And you turn the corner and you hear a Cuban band playing outside, whatever they're playing. What does that sound like? How well can you emulate that? Like, can you embody that culture in your own track? That's what I'm listening for. Can you embody that moment, that nightlife, like all the lights, the, you know, the heat, the sweat, you know, in like a summer Cuban night? I'm not saying you need to do Cuban music for sync, okay? It's just an example. It probably wouldn't hurt to get some in your catalog, though. But my point is, if your Cuban track doesn't sound 100% Cuban, then I'm going to tell you to hire some people. It's that simple. Either hire some people or like change lanes. Get the real players. Hire the team that's going to get this done in an extremely high quality way. And there are plenty of options for you to get access to high quality, high performing musicians out there. Like, you can write the parts, but just give it to them and let them replace it. You may even know someone. Someone in your circle may know someone. Or you can find someone online. Tap your network. Tap your socials. Get in there and find someone to take your track to the next level. I live and die by getting the right people in the right seats for my tracks. And that's honestly one of the biggest pieces of feedback I give people. I just had a conversation with someone else who's in the SBA right now, and they actually thanked me for telling them to find a collaborator. They thanked me. They were like, thank you so much. It took all this pressure off me. Because in this case, it wasn't just a session musician. It wasn't just a player. This person needed to nail a very specific direction from one of the briefs that we have available inside the SBA. And it wasn't totally in the pocket. It just was off early on. So I suggested that they should collab with another producer or co-writer, or, you know, join forces. Like, bring your talents together and make something valuable without all the guess and check that you're doing. Like, that's what I saw. It was like, I'm just going to kind of aim and fire and see if I hit. It's a moving target. We need to stabilize that target. And the easiest way to do that is with another person. If it's you and the target and the target's moving, then just get a friend to hold the target. Boom. Easy. It's collaboration. That's how I think about it. Because as soon as you invite another player into the fold, all of a sudden, your hit rate goes up because you have more minds in the mix to throw out ideas that will actually stick. Things that you're not going to necessarily throw away. And it also means less effort for everyone involved, which is great. Low effort, high reward. Like, that's what everybody wants. Low effort, high reward. And it works on the deeper production level too, and the writing level. Like, again, it doesn't just have to be session musicians. Getting the right people in the right seats is going to be one of the most impactful decisions you'll ever make. A lot of people have trouble with it. They don't want to give up percentages, or they don't want to pay the money, or whatever stupid excuse. If that's one of your excuses, I'm sorry if that offends you, but I think it's stupid. Figure it out. Do a favor. Like, do a work trade to get someone on your track. Like, whatever it takes. Again, one of the Sync Beast mantras, whatever it takes. Sell yourself. Sell out to your song, because it could make you so much money. It's just really hard. You know, I say that with a lot of passion, but I just want to shake people and just be like, stop getting in your own way. Like, just bring someone else on, you know? And the earlier you start bringing people on, the more healthy your network will be. You're going to develop better relationships, deeper relationships. They're going to have more trust. You're going to gel with your collaborators better. You're going to think about people to write for. That's honestly, I think, the most important thing in my journey, is I collabed with enough people and then I started writing for them. You know, not necessarily for them to release music, but, you know, if there was a part, I'd be like, oh yeah, I know so-and-so could knock this out of the park. So I'm going to hire them. That's when it gets fun. And I call it the Tarantino effect. If you go through, you know, Tarantino's movies, you'll notice he uses a lot of the same actors because he knows what he's going to get from them. He writes characters for the actors that he knows and loves, who also happen to trust him. Now, that was a lot. So let's do a little recap before putting this thing to bed. In some ways, we scratched the surface. In others, we kind of went deep. So when I give feedback, my main focuses on your track are threefold. Did you use references? Like, did you use a validated source of inspiration? Because if you didn't, start over. That's number one. Number two, does your track unfold over time? Does it tell a story? Does it leave room for growth? Does it have the right amount of negative space? Does it say the thing and then it gets out? Does it sound mature? Which also moves into number three, Does it have kick-ass production? Like, is the execution pro? And of course, there are other things. There's so many other things to think about. But if I could just boil them down to like the three main things that I listen for, where I start to pick things apart and poke holes and find problems and then solve them. And then all of a sudden we come out the other end with a really, really good, freaking good track. These are it. Refs, stories, production. That's really what it's all about. So yeah, there's a million rules. And I give even more creative suggestions to enhance them, to follow them, and then enhance the tracks. But these three things are crucial to what we do inside SyncBeast and to how we position our tracks for the best pitches possible. Again, no brainers. We want libraries to be like, yep, I don't, like, say less, right? I only need to hear 30 seconds and I want it. You know, that's perfect world. We don't live in a perfect world. But we want it to be a no-brainer. We want it to be a shoe-in. Big brand pitches require that we inject a lot of different things in our tracks to call out to those brands, the things that they're expecting, their standard. They need to maintain interest over time, and they need to offer some moments of discovery. And we do that by first writing what sells right now. Like, make the tracks that are in ads. It's so easy. Again, this is why we use references. And then unfold your tracks and unfold the arrangement and unfold the sections over time. Unfold the top line over time. Allow simplicity to give way to complexity as the song goes on. And then allow complexity to give way to simplicity, like up and down and up and down. And then finally, you want to smack them in the face with killer production. And when I mean smacking them in the face, I just mean spoon feeding them exactly what they expect to hear. Quality. Is it appropriate for the genre? Is it appropriate for the style? Is it appropriate for the track? And then does it align with our project? In other words, your tracks have to sound as good as their projects look. So do whatever you can, whatever it takes to get them there. Even if it means that you barely do anything in the end, because the cost of mediocre music is too damn high. So consider that the next time you need to pony up some cash to get your tracks, your assets, remember, to sound as good as possible so that they can be as valuable as possible. Because that's what I'm interested in. Valuable tracks, no-brainer tracks that make brands say, yep, that's the one we want. And they make libraries say, give it to me. I want to rep that. I want to pitch that. And hopefully they can come to that decision with as little friction as possible. That's the true essence of the sync game. And that's it, y'all. If you're listening to this because you want to be here and you want to soak up all the crazy ways that I think about sync, thank you. Seriously, thank you for being here. It's not for me. It's for you. That's why I make these episodes. So if these principles helped you think better today, please consider leaving a review. It would really help the reach of this podcast, get it out to more people who need it. They need this information because they don't have access to this high-level way of thinking. And if someone who needs it comes to mind, then you could just send it to them. I mean, if they can get what you got out of it today, then think about how you guys will be on the same level and how you can use it as a team. That's what it's all about. And you can find me at syncbeast.co on Instagram. And be sure to catch the next episode because I'm talking a ton more about how to think at the highest level of sync. It's the game I play every single day, and I want to see you win. So stay hungry, and I will talk to you soon. See ya.